Hello, friends.
Hey, how y'all doing? Welcome to another edition of the Antique Phonograph Music Program. Here I am, your host, Mac, back in the studio. Me and the Grammy Phone. Hey, we started off there with A Vision of Salome by the Victor Bohemian Orchestra. It's a weird series, a one-sided 5200, which I don't have a number for. It's about 1912, I'd assume, though, somewhere around there. Yeah, so here I am, back again with a pile of shellac. And what do we got? Oh, a whole bunch of stuff today. Another big variety show. And we're going to do a little bit of some bluesy stuff right now. Mamie Smith, largely credited with kicking off the ladies in the blues, the whole thing of the crazy blues, launching the blues on record, written by the great Perry Bradford. But they had a miss before that record that came out, a tune called That Thing Called Love. You know, because the first record's not always the hit, right? So this one's from 1920. Mamie Smith. I'm not credited with her Jazz Hounds on this one. Just with contra alto with Riga Orchestra. Oh. She don't have her band yet. It's here.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, it sounds like this is definitely pre-Jazz Hounds. I know that Perry Bradford did meet some resistance in getting Mamie to record, even. You know, it's quite a step for these ladies to be getting in there with their bands doing their thing. Here's a record that I really love. It's one of my favorite blues records. It's a little tore up, but it's got such a great feel. It's Irene Gibbons, Comedian with Jazz Band. I don't know why they're calling her Comedian. She's sounding pretty serious on this recording to me. And I can't find any photos of this lady online. Yeah, there's always still something to discover, isn't there? But this one is from 1923. Irene Gibbons. That Dada strain. Dada. Love to say Dada. Oh, yeah. Great one. Great one. Love her voice. I think I maybe have one other record by her. Not too many are out there by her. The wonderful Miss Irene Gibbons. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Late teens, early 20s, that jazz and blues thing was popping. It was getting out there. And really what kicked it off on record is one of the bands that hold one of the most controversial positions in history. I mean, liken it to Elvis popularizing rock and roll, the original Dixieland jazz band being the first to put jazz on record, that is. It was certainly out there being played and enjoyed in lots of cities throughout the United States, but definitely their recording of Livery Stable Blues kicked off the jazz age in 1917. I mean, it was just before the launch of World War I. So the frenetic energy of that record and then the chaos that ensued after World War I with the generation trying to find their place, it was quite an upheaval. Victor was actually frankly surprised by the effect this record had when it came out in May of 1917. And, they really liked to keep their reputation highbrow, and they were surprised at the lowbrow success of this tune, so much so that they didn't record this band for about a year afterwards. And by that time, they were already getting Paul Whiteman up to speed to smooth out this jazz music, make it a little more orchestral, a little more tasteful. But we like it raw and dirty. Yeah, they didn't realize that. But it didn't matter because the patents were wearing out and records were getting out there around 1919 of all these new labels like Paramount and OK and others getting this music out there. But anyway, from their second wave of recordings, here is the original Dixieland Jazz Band with a tune called Fidgety Feet. Fidgety. Oh, yeah. I love that energy of the band. It really is fun. And from what I understand, this band, they had a lot of antics as they were playing. They were very physical, running around, jumping around, playing the trombone with their feet, costumes, all sorts of stuff to make it fun. It wasn't just watching music. And they really had to tell people, get up and dance. This is dance music. This is not sit around music. Yeah, it was, you know, they came to New York. It was a phenomenon, and it was they weren't obvious to record, but they really played a long time in New York and really caused a sensation. Place was called Ryzen Weber's. It was pretty much Columbus Circle. I believe it was 58th and 8th. Long gone. But yeah, where jazz really took hold in New York. Country music didn't take hold in New York. Well, I suppose we could say that there's every kind of music in New York, but definitely not known as a country town. And the thing is, country music came to be a phenomenon in the late teens, where they started realizing that there were these traditions going on that they could record, and it was a whole other new world. They were calling it old-timey music, mountain music, country dances. This next record is by one of my favorite early country artists, Fiddlin' Powers and Family. This is a Victor record from 1924. Listed as Country Dance of the Southern Mountaineers. And it's called Sugar in the Gourd. And it just goes and goes. And it feels like water flowing over a waterfall that you just can't stop looking at. And after hours and hours, you just love it. That's what this sounds like to me. Thank you. It's also one of those records where I feel they could play that all night long. Listen, that's a these performances are limited by the spin of the record at 78 or 80 or 72, whatever that one happens to be. And, you know, 3 minutes. But, man, put them at a barn dance playing that number. That'll go on for an hour, I bet. People will be kicking their heels up to that for a long time. So, and I find a lot of these country records that go on like that have a very abrupt ending because there's probably them playing and the engineer is, at a certain point, pulls his finger across his throat, like, cut it, that's it. And they sort of stop. Right. Another pioneering fiddler, Mr. Fiddlin' John Carson. Oh, yeah. Guy who was out there doing his thing. The record companies didn't have much faith in him, so he put some records out himself and started selling them, and then he got noticed. You know, self-publishing circa 1919. But here he is with a slightly later tune from 1923. But his signature sound comes through on this. Fiddlin' John Carson and Papa's Billy Goat. Yeah, one of those guys where, you know, the recording industry was pretty well set by the early 20s. And it was also pretty well vetted by the industry as to who would record and who wouldn't. And they had very set ideas about how songs should be and how they should be sung. And You know, here's a guy, Fiddlin' John Carson, who really doesn't have much of a voice. He's kind of scratching along and playing, but it had an appeal. So it kind of broke the barriers in a certain way of what could sell to the folks. It didn't just have to be some sweet-sounding ballad. I mean, this was already happening with the craziness of the blues. So country was sort of breaking it out in another direction. And really one of the songs that established country as a thing was a song called The Prisoner Song from 1920, made popular by Vernon Dalhart. Vernon was kind of a light opera singer, but then moved towards these kinds of songs. Basically, he was doing a version of The Wreck of the Old 97, which was popular, and he had an idea of this song, which he said was written by his brother, but authorship was pretty much contested widely. I'm not sure how that ever turned out. But the fact is that this Prisoner Song kind of established the whole genre of country, just the way maybe the original Dixieland jazz band established country. The Prisoner Song definitely put it that way. And it's very much, it established this style of recording, and his subsequent disaster songs pretty much set the tone for the sad country singer song. That was a character in cartoons, and you still think of it that way when someone messes around with that. But The Prisoner Song, Vernon Dalhart, huge, huge record of 1920, made him a star. And here it is.
Before my poor darling would suffer.
You know what I mean? You hear it. It's totally the, definitely one of the standards in country music, that song and that style. That established it. It was a new thing at that point. All right. How about some singers singing some songs right now? Miss Blossom Seeley. She was a huge vaudeville star. And, you know, in her way, helped popularize jazz, getting it out into the mainstream. You know, everyone jumped on the jazz bandwagon once it became popular. Here's her song, The Funeral Blues, from 1921 on the Columbia label. Love this one. It sounded like her voice died on that last note there. Mm-hmm. You know that feeling, right? Ever get that feeling when love dies? You kind of feel it coming. Maybe you don't want to talk about it at first, but you feel it until it comes knocking like that woodblock in that song. My love for you died last night. Mm-mm-mm. No one wants to hear that. And it usually doesn't take overnight. It takes longer than that. But you know what? Enough about that. Here's a weird title. It Made You Happy When You Made Me Cry. What? What kind of glutton for punishment is that? It Made You Happy When You Made Me Cry. Okay. Peggy Britton on the Cameo label. Might be a pseudonym for somebody. I'm not sure. 1926 on the Cameo label. Let's hear it.
The night you left me, you might have told me we'd never meet again. You didn't worry, you aren't sorry, you should have told me then. It made you happy when you made me cry. It made you happy when we said goodbye. By all the stars above you, I'd hate you like I love you. I thought that I was yours and you were mine, but you were someone else's all the time. You made me love you, you made me sigh, and yet it made you happy when you made me cry. When you made me cry, it made you happy when we said goodbye. By all the stars above you, I hate you like I love you. I thought that I was yours and you were mine, but you were someone else's. All the time you made me love you, you made me sigh, and yet it made you happy when you made me cry.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, I'm a little underwhelmed by that one. All right. Okay, moving on to Miss Vesta Victoria, a delightful English music hall star. One of her first hits in 1890, around there, was Daddy Wouldn't Buy Me a Bow Wow. Nice. Hugely popular in the UK. She did a tour of the United States in 1907. Where again, she was paid a lot of money, very popular, and she was invited by the Victor Talking Machine Company to go and make some recordings, which she did. And now we're going to hear one of those, and this is called Summer Blouses from 1908, I should say. Summer Blouses. Hasn't really been very warm for Summer Blouses. But at least we can hear Vesta sing about them. Take it, Vesta.
I've been old-fashioned all my life and had old-fashioned ways. But with the times I'm going to move, you must do nowadays. A young man in a draper shop, I called in up the whip. And declared that I was lovely, but a trifle overdressed. He jawed and jawed for half an hour on fashion's latest weave, and kidded me to spend my hard-earned cash into a sleeve. Summer blouses, they tell me that they're great, so I must be up to date from the housing. I'll display my lovely form. They say they're cool, but I think they're very warm. They're just the thing a mother wants, to strain the Sunday greens, to make them come in useful. There are lots of ways and means. For instance, when our Jimmy goes out fishing with a tin, they'll do to stick upon his rod to catch the tiddlers in. Old mother Eve, she didn't care a fig for none of these. When she wanted costumes, all she did was shake the trees. Summer blouses, summer blouses. And they tell me that they're great, so I must be up to date. From the housing, I'll display my lovely form. They say they're cool, but I think they're very warm. I think us girls have covered up our forms quite long enough. 20-90 in the shade, and dressed in all this stuff. I'll bet my life when I get one of these things on me back, the chaps around our way will all be well upon me dress. And the only thing before I go strolling in the park, I'll have to put some whitewash on my little strawberry mask. Summer blouses, summer blouses. They tell me that they're great, so I must be up to date. From the housing, I'll display my lovely form. They say they're cool, but I think they're very warm.
There she is. Oof. I don't like when the needle goes across onto the label. Not cool. Okay. Yeah, she's delightful. Actually, a few years ago, she made about 5 or 6 records for Victor. I found several of them all at once in one little pile. So that was kind of nice. I was happy about that. I've played probably most of them for you through the years here. Because I've pretty much played all my records for you here through the years. I don't have any more records to play. So I'm playing the same ones. Things have changed. We'll talk more about that next week. But continuing. This is basically a recording of a street piano. You know, that you might imagine the Italian dude with a monkey. Oh, no. Did I make a stereotypical remark there? I don't know. Okay, a guy standing there with cranking the piano with a dog, not a monkey. I didn't mean to, like, you know, stereotype monkeys are the only things that go with organ grinders. It could have been another animal or something. But so yes, it's called the Georgia Grind. It's just a street piano. Weird that it's recorded on a disc for people to listen to at home. Just. Yeah, here it is.
Thank you.
I really want an organ grinder. Grinding organ. I really want one. I think that I could have another career as an organ grinder, making appearances. I have ideas of how I could do it, and I wouldn't use a real monkey. No, I would use some other kind of monkey. And I would just be creepy, because I kind of like being creepy, but in a non-creepy way. You know, I mean, I'm all for making people uncomfortable, but not too uncomfortable. So, come to see me in Greenwood Park, Greenwood Cemetery in October, and you'll see what I'm talking about there. What I'm not talking about there is yodeling, and it's been a while since I played a yodel record for you all. So Al H. Wilson was one of the biggest yodelers. Here he is in Tyrol. Tyrol. Take it, Al. Okay. Right. Very nice. Love those yodelings, you know, for sure. And where are we at? Oh, sorry. I got a little thrown here for a second. Maybe we'll gain my composure, get the next record ready, And tell you that next week I'll be back. Mike will be here with me. Mike the Barber will be doing a show together. It'll be the last of this schedule. And we'll talk more about that next week for sure. And one more record to play for you. Oh, I just mentioned that if you're interested in some of the other stuff that is going on with me and the Phonograph, my Instagram is Phonograph DJ Mac. And I'm getting lost in my own thoughts here. Of records and music and other stuff. I've got one more record I'm going to play here for you. And I always like finding these kind of very ethnic records with a lot of artists that I don't really know a lot about. Especially the foreign labels, I can't even read them. Because this next one is a Hungarian gypsy band from Berkis Bella. And there's not really much to say about it because it's recorded in Hungary. It's a Hungarian gypsy band, they call it. I hope so. I haven't played this one in a while. But I do love these OK records. As I hope you do too. And that's going to about do it for this week's edition of the Antique Phonograph Music Program. Like I said, I'll be back next week with Mike. We'll be doing our little show together. And I hope you'll join us. I don't know what we have in mind. But there's lots of things on the horizon. I can tell you that for sure. We'll be there. I think I have to talk for another 45 seconds before I play my record. Maybe I'll do the ID now instead of doing it later. Yes, I'm going to do that. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Folks, your host, Mac of the Antique Phonograph Music. Until next time, saying 19 night, everybody. Thank you.
jump, jump, jump.